RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time for our now semi-regular catch-up with Shane Jones, Minister for Regional Development, Minister for Resources, Associate Minister of Finance, Associate Minister for Energy, NZ First member, of course. And Shane, good to have you back on RCR.
Kia ora, folks. Thank you for enabling me to pop in again.
Yeah, we enjoy it. Now, first can I say, and I think this is on behalf of most of our listeners, it was great to see Tanya Unkevich in the House saying what she said. The clips are going around. We even played it on RCR. Kind of the first time some of the things she said has been heard in that chamber, though the rabble on the other side were obviously triggered. So just wanted to pass that on.
Thank you very much. I shall ensure that I repeat your affirmation. Of course, there was a hell of a wall of noise trying to drown her out. Then she went to another level, which often happens when you get that level of behaviour in Parliament. And I think there might have been some censuring remarks coming from the Speaker trying to restore order. But look, she's a stalwart. She understands the area very well, and she knows where the different pressure points are.
Yeah, the noise that you and I mentioned made reference to seemed to me to be very insensitive. We're dealing with a very sensitive thing here. Many people have been damaged, whether you want to argue that or not. And to react like that when you're talking about something that's deadly serious.
Yeah, I think you've got to bear in mind that they're trying in those cases to trivialise the personality of the MP. But more importantly, we all know that the study that was set up by the regime under Jacinda Ardern was very much a cack-handed Clayton's affair. It was never going to dig and drill deeply into the issues that are likely to haunt New Zealand for a long time, quite apart from the economic costs, but the impact that has left a sense of angst amongst so many young people and, quite frankly, has created a new set of attitudes that are not conducive to the development of our sense of nationhood or, quite frankly, the growth of our country.
I want to get on to Paul Mill and other issues in just a moment, but one thing I noticed when I see what you are saying in that House and in media, etc. You don't like the Greens, do you?
No, look, I'm involved in the contest of ideas. I do not believe in zero growth. I do not believe that my party's name is New Zealand First. It's not Climate First. I believe that climate challenges are only one particular thing that we've got to be dealing with in relation to the broad range of threats to our quality of life. And quite frankly, I resent the notion that people are being turned into a helpless blob because foolishly we're boiling the planet. I've never believed that. I believe in the infinite capacity of human beings to adjust, to adapt, and derive answers in science, technology, and belief, not the least of which is self-belief. So the Greens stand for everything which, in my view, is largely diametrically opposed to what I just said.
Yeah, right. 180 degrees. Yeah. Okay. Sad news to hear about Winstone Pulp Mill. We had Weston Curtin, the mayor of Ruapehu District, on here a few weeks ago, and the way he was talking, there was kind of still some light, you know, coming down the tunnel there, and even talked about maintaining current hedging arrangements, etc., to keep within an energy price band that would keep the business viable. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of it. I believe there were high-level meetings to try and save this thing. You may have been in the room, probably were. What happened here, Shane? This is a fail.
Yeah, so in terms of the position and the decision that the government eventually arrived at, that was articulated by the Prime Minister. But I mean, if you look at what the Prime Minister said at the end of his statement, this situation could have been averted and could have been solved by the energy companies. Like, I've just had people meeting with me recently who have pointed out that the energy companies are offering to certain companies power at $80 a unit. And that's all the people in Winstone need it. not 250, not 800, not 500. And sadly, the power companies have no interest in taking care of energy security, looking after the viability of industry, and they all make it the problem of the government. We don't have the fiscal bandwidth to write a check out every time a big employer strikes a problem. So what we've got to do, because I do think we're going to see more of this, we've got to shrink and moderate the cost of energy in New Zealand, or it's going to be internationally impossible in a competitive sense to continue to run businesses in New Zealand.
Don't they realise how bad this looks?
Well, I certainly realise how bad it looks.
It's them.
In terms of the energy sector, no.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the bloke is running Meridians on over $3 million a year. He stands up and gives piety riddle lectures about corporate sovereignty and that this was a blip and then the nature of the rain. So anyway, look, we're having a review, and within that review will be various options to change the structure of the sector. And if I have my way, we'll be breaking them up.
Yeah, meantime, 230 workers in Oakuni, which is just a small place, really, have been nuked.
Yeah, no, it's a ghastly outcome, mate. It really is. I don't want to give anyone a false hope, however, that maybe new purchases and people interested in those assets. But this is a set of owners. They said very clearly, if you can't help us moderate the cost of energy, then we cannot afford to remain open in New Zealand. And that's it. They made their decision.
Okay. I want to move on to this again. It concerns our audience. They think a lot about this. Deregulation of genetic modification and biotechnology, potential impact on the agricultural sector, and the hard-won, okay, clean, green premium. Do you see any risks here? Because there seems to be a lot of enthusiasm, and it's still early days in the GE world.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. We're no strangers in New Zealand in terms of banning things. I mean, COVID was one big ban.
Yeah, though it's not banned, to be fair. The work can take place in the lab, and if it can be proven to be safe outside the lab, there are mechanisms for that.
But we're trying to move away from ban-like thinking. We're trying to find the right sweet spot that the infinite strength of science and technology will deliver us new answers to problems of weather, problems of food security. And if we continually cover ourselves in a blanket of unwillingness to move forward and make trade-offs, then don't be surprised if over time our wealth continues to decline. We're a small population, but we're capable of infinite ingenuity through science and technology. And what you refer to, GMO, is only one space. But I'd be the first to admit there's a lot of nervousness around it. But I say to you, if you want to ban everything, then why were you concerned about COVID?
Maybe ban's not the word, just extreme caution.
Yeah, I think being very judicious and taking the attitude of, I don't want to sound too old-fashioned, but, you know, there's that figure when I grew up with, are you a doubting Thomas? I.e., you need a great deal of reassurance and confidence before you push the go button. And I suspect that that's probably what's going to continue to guide us, other than the fact we've got to trade off what our anxieties might be against the economic upside of being able to achieve more from the same material and create more wealth for not only ourselves, but the future generations.
New Māori Queen, 27-year-old Ngā Wai Hono e Te Pō, her role as a facilitator of Kotahitanga. It's early days, but have you anything to say about that?
Well, I think Queen Elizabeth in the 1950s, so she was 25 or 24, 26. I mean, this young lady, subject to her health holding up, could be on that ancestral throne for 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, arguably 50 years.
Yeah, maybe even more. I had a few more on top of that.
Yeah, so I mean, Queen Victoria in the making, but it's a big challenge. Her mother, I think, will be very protective of her. I think there'll be some high-quality advisors around her. And the concept of the kingitanga is something that has grown in awareness throughout New Zealand. There are people who are dismissive of it, but whether you and I like it, there's a whole new generation who accept that in the latter stages of his life, King Tuheitia, he played a role of trying to reach out and give a sense of confidence and reassurance to all sorts of issues throughout New Zealand. His health was very, very weak, though, for a long period of time. He struggled in the early stages of his role. But, you know, it's like I said in TV, mate, in Parliament, many of us end up with roles in life where some just take it, others are given it, like I've been given it by dint of the public political process, and a few inherit it. And that inheritance, at the end of the day, requires you to go out there and boost trust and respect. Well, respect, buddy, can only be earned, and it can only be earned by people having confidence that you're authentic and you actually get to add something of value to beyond the daily humdrum of life.
Mm. Treaty Principles Bill. I know New Zealand First doesn't support it. We've talked about that. But I wonder if you've got any comment to make about the open letter from the 400-plus church leaders kind of saying, don't do it.
Oh, well, they're participating in the contest of ideas. They're entitled, and obviously the Anglican missionaries had a great deal to do with the signing of the original treaty, as you and I both know. I'm not too hot and bothered about the stance that the church leaders have taken. It's a contest of ideas. We live in an open democratic system. I don't know if Bishop Tamaki was a part of that crowd. Whether or not I would have been quite as overt as they've been, that's an irrelevancy. I know some of them. I grew up in my own church. I went to St. Stephen's Māori Boys School, owned by the Anglican Church. And I would just say that to them, your contribution is acknowledged, but this is a contest of ideas.
But they kind of elevate the treaty to some sort of covenant, biblical covenant almost. And it's
it's a bit over the top. Those of us who have covered the sort of followed the treaty, but for a number of decades, the Anglican Church has had that conception about the treaty. They've treated it as being analogous to a covenant, possibly because their own missionaries were involved in the construction and the translation of the treaty. But look, I wouldn't read too much in it. There's going to be no shortage of voices, colour, and noise over the next 6 months.
Yeah. Okay, I'm asking you this because one of our guests brought it up in an interview, and that was open cast coal mining on ecologically significant conservation land and water conservation reserve on the west coast's Stockton, Denison Plateau, put in place, they said, to protect nearby settlements' water supply. And the question is, why would you do that, Shane?
Yeah, so I think they're talking about a mine called Te Kuha. Now, I've been over in a helicopter and looked at that area, and obviously it has not been approved. There is a mine up in that area that's owned by Bathurst, and they have a host of legal entitlements to run their business. But the Te Kuha mine is neighbouring, and I've been told that the mine is quite separate from the water storage capacity for, I think it's Westport, or one of the areas down there. But, I mean, the point is well made. But I'd also say we mustn't allow our decisions to be made in respect of resources by fear, alarmism, or indeed intimidation. Let's trust in science, technology, and economic rationalism, and then also identify, okay, how important is a population of wekas, who, by the way, are eating the snails, and how can that be contrasted with jobs and export revenue? And that's what politicians are expected to do on a daily basis. You make trade-offs. But the person alarmed that there'll be some sudden announcement or declaration of new permits to start mining those areas, I want to allay your fears.
What are you going to do about the wekas then, Shane? Well, stop them at going at the snails, you know.
I'm part of the generation who's eaten Weckers. although they didn't come from the West Coast. I mean, I'm being slightly facetious, but I'm telling the truth as well. You know, you can collect and save as many snails as you want, but they will fall prey to Weckers because the Weckers have to eat something.
That'd be a natural predation for Weckers anyway, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is that there's a sense that the draglines and dozers and diggers are going to have a fatal effect on lots of these critters running around in the environment, providing that the overarching population at the net level is a lot better off. I think New Zealanders and society know that one or three of these critters will go by the way from time to time.
I want to finish on immigration only because it came up in the Trump-Harris debate. I know that's the US and we're here, but, you
wow,
know.
Wow, what a wild affair that was, man.
Yeah. What did you make of that? Who won? Are you allowed to say?
Well, each of them. I mean, obviously, Kamala's got a very unusual voice. It's a sort of mixture of shrillness, very highly pitched, and it doesn't do anything for my ears.
Yeah, she sort of swallows words through her nose, sort of. I thought.
I think that she took the approach of trying to poke the bear. And, you know, Trump suffered so many provocations, but he came back really strong. I didn't know that Haitians had for breakfast dogs and for dinner cats, so that probably wasn't the smartest thing to have said. But it also reflected a Hollywood dimension of their politics, mate.
It's on camera, apparently. You can't believe your eyes these days. I mean, that's the funny side of it. But, you know, with high immigration and lowering of per capita wealth, which is an effect from that, and we even heard a story, someone contacted us yesterday in the early days of the kiwi fruit, the labor came from other countries and pets started disappearing into Phuket. So, you know, it's happened before. That was in the 70s. Though the serious side of that is that we have to be really, don't we, really careful of how we manage the way we run immigration. It has to be very...
Totally, of course we do.
Yeah.
What's the point of boosting immigration if your infrastructure can't cope with what you've got? And secondly, we need people that the people who come here ought to be the people we need, not the ones who need us.
Are we a bit too of a soft touch, or have we been for whatever reason?
Historically, we have. Yeah, no. We need to take quite a robust approach. And, of course, Labor opened up the floodgates, and we've got too many people here who probably have a mismatch between what the economy needs and what they're able to deliver.
Okay, one more last real quick question. The NZSIS report came out, and coming up in those discussions we had, it turns out that people with residency in New Zealand can work in the public service. They need to be citizens, don't they?
Well, it does take a long time for a resident to transition through into being a citizen. I think whether they're a citizen or a resident, it's the code and the obligations that they have to uphold. And where those obligations may have been undermined or soiled, then they need to be held responsible for that. If it's found, unprofessional conduct.
Okay. Thanks again for dropping in, Shane Jones. We'll talk again. Thank you.
See you, mate.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.